Hi, I'm Diana Peninsula, Associate Editor of American Libraries, the magazine of the American Library Association, and you're listening to Call Number with American Libraries. From chatbots to image generators to robot companions, artificial intelligence is a hot topic across many industries right now. This episode, we're exploring how AI is emerging in libraries. First, Associate Editor Megan Bennett speaks with Cheryl Eberle and Larry Singer, both from Santa Ana Public Library in California. They discuss the library's Astound initiative, which provides neurodivergent youth with access to robots that help them build social-emotional skills. This includes an AI robot named Moxie, who is available for checkout. Then I speak with Alyssa Malaspina, teacher librarian at Union High School in New Jersey. Malaspina's website and newsletter, The AI School Librarian, offers news and resources to help other information professionals navigate the fast-growing technology. We discuss generative AI and the ways in which students, teachers, and librarians are using it in schools. But first, an ad from our sponsor. Heading to PLA? Stop by the Booklist booth at booth number 1317 for free copies of Booklist Reader, Booklist, and their guide to graphic novels. Take a break from the hustle and bustle of the conference and spin their book recommendation wheel to receive a free book suggestion to help you achieve those 2024 reading goals. Plus, Booklist's adult books editor, Donna Seaman, will host a packed book buzz with your favorite publishers on Thursday, April 4th at 2 p.m. Eastern. Visit the Booklist website for more details. Hope to see you there. In February 2022, Santa Ana Public Library in California launched Robots in Residence, a program that gives youth the opportunity to try new technologies. Part of that program, Astound, is designed to support patrons on the autism spectrum through the use of robots that help with social-emotional learning. One of those robots is Moxie, described as the world's first AI robot for kids. American Libraries Associate Editor Megan Bennett speaks with Principal Librarian Cheryl Eberle and Library Associate Larry Singer to learn more.
What prompted the creation of this program?
So I've been a young adult librarian for a long time, and STEM and technology, or what I call future age technologies, is something I'm really, really interested in. And it's something that I'm really passionate about making sure youth in our community have access to. Because Santa Ana is, you know, high poverty, high risk, high need community. When there's a digital divide in Santa Ana, it's even deeper. I've always tried in all the grants that I've written over many, many years to always make sure there's access to not just like the current technology, but really like future edge kind of upcoming stuff for young people to be familiar with, to have access to, you know, when it comes, they already know it. It's kind of in keeping with what we've always kind of done. And then the robots in residence, we've always had great things like artists in residence, you know, in Santa Ana. So I thought, you know, it'd be great to have robots, and kids love it. So, and there's such a wide range of different types of robots, you know, that's a small, tiny, you know, Ozobots that kind of go to the big kind of talking and interactive. And the Astound thing came out of it because as I was researching different robots, we also have a lot of youth on the spectrum that come to the library. We've had a lot of teens who were neurodivergent coming to the library and find a good space for themselves. So in the research, I found that there is robot-mediated behavior intervention, which is kind of cutting edge, and it's really being done a lot in Europe, and China have really kind of taken that technology. And it's in the United States, it is too, but those robots are very expensive. They're about, you know, 11,000, 15,000. And then Milo that we have is about 25. So it's very expensive. It's not very accessible. So the thing about neurodivergent youth or youth on the spectrum is that if you're Spanish speaking and if you're a monolingual Spanish family, services are even more limited, you know, so you have kind of like a double kind of whammy. And so that's why we figured, okay, this would be a good thing to have something good to try and do at our library. And this was, you remember, it was, you know, ARPA funding were coming. So we had money. So this is the time in which you can like, okay, there's money coming in to experiment. Let's try this. Let's try something. You know, and it's not just neurodivergent youth, because coming out of COVID, kids have socialization issues started. So yeah. The robot was just like a really kind of non-threatening and, you know, consistent socialization.
Your library offers a variety of robots, including Kebby, Milo, Moxie, Neo, QT. Can you tell us a little bit about each one?
Milo is the most human-like, because it has facial expressions. So some people gravitate completely towards Milo, others don't.
So QT, Kebby, Neo, they all come from the same company, and they're all based on the same software. But like QT is a more basic kind of software. QT is just a robot that stands there. Kebby is just a head, and it just sits there, and Kebby has an arm. And then Neo is like a lifelike robot. And then Milo is from a different company, and it has different programming as well.
And Moxie is a whole nother different company, and Moxie is very interactive. So Moxie will interact and talk and respond to you. The others, you have a user behind kind of like interfacing and doing the dialogue with the kids.
Moxie's more just a conversational robot, and it has like very kind of basic lessons, whereas the other ones, they have social skills training, very basic math skills, conversation skills, stuff that an autistic youth would need help with.
And they have a calm down. They have a way of like helping when a kid, you know, is stressed out. They can kind of help the kid calm themselves down.
Can you share about the kind of improvements that parents have reported seeing in their children after using these robots?
Definitely better social skills. It's like kids that don't interact, they interact with the robots, you know, and they calm down. For Moxie, one parent has been using it to teach the kid to learn English, and the kid's English skills have been improving.
They open up a lot more. Think of a flower bud. Think of the flower bud coming close to a robot and just like opening up. And it's just amazing the transformation when you see them just sitting there waiting their turn. And they're not really interacting with their parents or whatever, and they're not really interacting with the other kids, and they're just sitting there. And then when they get to the robot, they just start talking to the robot, and like you know, I had one kid say, "Hey, Kebby, how you doing, Kebby? Kebby, how's it going?" And just there was a little software quirk, and so the child was like, "Oh, are you okay, Kebby? Let me help you out." It's really interesting how they kind of just adopt the belief that this robot is really interacting with them. Even if they see me typing away behind the computer, they still are able to like just shut that out and interact with the robot.
And especially with kids on the spectrum, and these are kids that, you know, they're not interacting with their parents, they're not interacting, but with the robot, it's like, it's a whole different level of interaction.
Is the idea or the hope or like the design of it, is it that those skills will be transferred to like talking to their parents or classmates?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's just being able to be comfortable talking and practicing social skills. And then the robots do have like, you know, different emotions, range of emotions.
How would you describe the importance of offering this service?
For me, it's a core mission of accessibility. It's access. It's information, but it provides access to information, access to future, access to knowledge, access to things. And these robots, especially the ones who are with the autism, they provide access to folks or neurodivergent who might not be able to access even other types and things in front of them, because accessibility is it's a challenge.
Do you have any advice for libraries that would be looking to consider something similar?
Be open from learning from your failures, because you will learn the most from the things that don't work as opposed to the things that work. Like I said, the companies who are putting this technology, you know, like Robokind with Milo, Movia with the other ones, Moxie, they really have been really great with customer service. Yeah, I highly encourage libraries to try it. Just be curious and just open and let the patrons kind of guide you on it.
Mastering the art of reader's advisory involves ongoing study, both of major concepts that form the backbone of a good RA practice and of the skills that make your RA practice effective in the day-to-day. Join Booklist on Thursday, March 14th for a series of free workshops featuring your favorite librarians designed to keep you up to speed on both the ideas and practices that will enhance your RA game. Visit the Booklist website to register now so you can learn from experts in the field about how genres relate to each other, how to talk to patrons about their leisure reading, and how to write an effective book annotation. When teacher librarian Alyssa Malaspina isn't busy with her day job at Union High School in New Jersey, she's managing the AI School Librarian website and newsletter, gathering tools to help librarians better understand AI. We discuss how students at her school are engaging with generative AI and what library professionals should keep in mind when using this technology.
How did your interest in artificial intelligence grow?
So I've always been interested in technology, and sort of that's why I became a librarian. I was teaching history, and at the time, back in the olden days, the only place that you would have like computers in the school or any technology was in the library. And I was like, this really interests me. I want to learn more about it. And so the only place that I could really learn more and really start to like look at how could we use this technology with our students was in the library. So I was like, let me go back and become a librarian. And I really focused on the ed tech part of the librarian role. I went back and I got my degree in education with master's, but it had a lot of ed tech background and also, you know, my library certification, and then went on to become a librarian. And so I've always been really interested in like the newest and latest technology. So for I was doing QR codes like way before like the pandemic. I mean, like where everybody learned how. It's like that 10 years ago, like, you know, augmented reality was something I've always, you know, been interested in. Makerspaces, you name it, like any of the newest technology I've been really interested in. So when this came out, it just like blew my mind. Well, it blew everybody's mind. But then I was, you know, like, I really just spent a lot of time going, how can I use this in education? How can we use this in the library? How can we make this something that others want to learn more about? And I started scrolling. And as a librarian, when we start scrolling and learning, I bookmark it and I share it with others. And so then that's sort of how it came to be, is when I would learn new things, I would just share it with the other people.
You run the AI School Librarian newsletter. So when did that start, and what do you offer, and what motivated you to open up this resource?
It started in like, what was it? It was like the end of the summer. And it was after I had been just building a Wakelet that just kept growing and growing and growing. As soon as I would find a new resource, I would throw it in the Wakelet. And the Wakelet just got so big that I was like, there's too much stuff in there. It just got to the point where it was like too overwhelming and I couldn't really explain things. So I was like, oh, let me take one resource, one or two resources, and sort of spend the time talking about that. So I was like, hey, there's not really anything out here right now that's sort of geared towards librarians, but also just educators in general. I mean, there are some tools, but I wanted to put that sort of lens as a librarian into this conversation. I just publish it once a week. I highlight one or two tools or something that I'm seeing out there. But I also have a Facebook group that is open to everybody that anyone can join, that if, you know, as I'm seeing something in social media, I just post it.
What have you heard from other school librarians or other librarians in general when it comes to their views on AI throughout all of your interactions that you've had so far?
So it's been really interesting. We had a really amazing conversation about this at the School Library Journal Summit. And we talked a lot about AI and the different ways to sort of use it in schools. And all of us sort of got together and had, you know, discussions about the implications of it, the good, the bad. How are we going to embrace this? How are we going to teach others about it? And had some really great conversations there and, you know, picked brains of other people who were using it. Because when you're a school librarian and you're like the only one in your building, which is what I am, one, I don't get to go out and talk to anybody else because I'm in the library all day. And two, I don't get to like really brainstorm with anybody else that's a librarian, except for my colleagues who we do talk, but they're all busy on their stuff too. So it's hard. In these conferences is where I've been a really great place for me to learn and grow and get ideas from people about different things. And I think we've spent a lot of time talking about lots of different aspects of it. There's so many different aspects that it's like you could spend an hour just talking about different ways to use it in your library. You could spend an hour just talking about like, how do we do policies related to it? There was just an awesome video that came out that one of my colleagues from Union shared with us, because we were talking about it a little as a group of librarians, about a girl who got in trouble for using Grammarly in her paper, and she's now on academic probation. And so there was a big article about that recently. And it was funny because we were discussing that as a group of librarians, because, you know, people are like, how do I do this? And I'm like, I always tell everyone at this point, there is no AI detection. Don't be using Turnitin. Don't be using like any of those things, because it's not keeping up with what's out there. And it's hurting children. Like, it hurt this girl who's now on academic probation for using Grammarly, which we tell to use Grammarly. We don't teach grammar anymore, really. So what do we teach our kids? We tell them, throw it into Grammarly. Well, with AI detection as it is, stuff is coming up as using AI when it might not really use AI. But yes, technically Grammarly is AI. So how do we deal with that? I mean, you could spend 2 hours just discussing that. So there's just so much out there to discuss that I think that this is a time period where we need to sort of have those conversations, but also like you could go in so many different directions.
From your experience, what are students in the high school age thinking about AI, and are they using it a lot, or are they wary of it?
Everything, all of the above. Are my students using it a lot? Yes. Do we have it unblocked at my school? Yes, because we believe that it should be an option. We are working on coming up with a policy or a guidelines or a position paper sort of on how to deal with it in the school where I'm at. When I was also on a school board, I just left in January. And in that school board, I wrote the plagiarism policy, and in it, included some discussion about AI, because it is something we have to start to think about as educators. But my students are using it all the time. And it was funny, the other day, my student came to me, she goes, guess what, Miss M, AI doesn't do math well. And I was like, yeah, I could have told you that. And she's like, well, I learned the hard way when I did my math homework using it and got them all wrong. And I was like, well, you now learned your lesson. And so they're using it, but they're also having to learn about it. And we spend time sort of talking about it. Like, you know, don't use it for math because it doesn't do math well. Yesterday, I was teaching them about the idea of like deep fakes and the idea of, is this real or is this AI? And how do we tell if it's AI or not? And how do we tell if it's a reliable source? And, you know, I just showed them Sora, which is an amazing tool that just came out by OpenAI, which does the video, the text to video. And we played like, was this AI made or not? So we talk about AI because this is the future we're going to be living in. But we also talk about news literacy, information literacy, all of that, because the kids need to learn to understand what is AI, what isn't AI, when we should use AI, when we shouldn't use AI, how should we use AI, what are the limitations and biases of AI.
What are some other fun projects, teaching, or workshops that you've done with your students that incorporate generative AI?
Oh, so I use generative AI on like a daily basis. Almost any social media that you see made for my library has been made with the help of AI in some way, shape, or form. Every day for Black History Month, for Women's History Month, for all of those things, I try to feature somebody on our social media or feature an idea or all of that. And before, it used to take a while to come up with the prompts and all the information to write. I literally just go into ChatGPT and I'm like, give me 4 weeks worth of information for high school students on, you know, Women's History Month. And I need a new post each day. And it gives me 4 weeks worth of information right there. And it writes it for me. My life is so much easier.
What are some things you'd like librarians to keep in mind when working with AI?
I think you need to embrace it. You can't be scared of it. I mean, I hear people like, I'm not going to do that. It's bad. It makes mistakes. It hallucinates. Yes, it does. I'm not saying it doesn't. I'm not saying that there's no bias. There are biases in it. There are hallucinations that occur. It doesn't do math very well. It's at the present moment can't really do, like, if I want something written, like I want to make a sticker and I want words on the sticker. It can't spell. So, like, even if you put the, like, I want it to say, Union High School Library, it's going to write something most of the time that is not Union High School Library. But it also is everywhere. Your phone has AI built into it at this point. Any of the Google products you are using or will be using somewhat soon, I'm now beta testing some of the Google AI products. They're going to be in your Google Docs. They're in your Google, your emails that you write. It's going to be almost in every product that you're using. So how do we learn how to use these with our students and so that we can teach them how to use it properly? We're usually the ones, the librarians, who are on the forefront of teaching our teachers and students how to do that. So we can't say no to it. We need to sort of embrace it, figure out how it can help us and how it can't. Where is it going to be, good or where is it not? And how can we teach others how to do that?
Do you have any practical AI tips? Any advice for librarians who want to implement AI in their instruction or learn about it in general?
Try it. Spend some time, play around with it. Try a few of the products, try ChatGPT, try Magic Studio AI, which, if you're an educator, is like mind-blowing what they can do, and it's free. Most of the features are free in it. It could take a lesson and be like, I don't want, how do I take this prompt and make it so that my kids are not going to use AI? And it will give you ideas on how to make your assignments like AI resistant. There's a whole tool that'll help you to write your emails and do all these things. So there's a lot out there right now that is going to make your life easier as educators. Now, can it be your everything, your go-to? No. It can just do a lot to help you, but you also need to realize that you can't just like take everything and just use it that way.
Staff training, in-services, local conference, Booklist can help. You can now request free copies of Booklist and Booklist Reader for upcoming staff programs so you can help train the next generation of library workers into readers, advisory, and collection development superstars. Visit the Booklist website or email info@booklistonline.com for more details. For more on AI and our episode guests, check out our March-April issue of American Libraries on americanlibraries.org. Next episode, we're discussing preservation. Is there a story or topic you'd like us to cover next? Let us know via email or social media. Thanks for listening.